Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth. And before we go on, I think it'll become self-evident that you are not in your normal comfy chair right now, thanks to the Find Your Friends app. I know where you are, but why don't you let everyone else know where you are right now?
I am actually sitting on the porch of our family home on the east coast of the United States, in New Jersey, on the Jersey Shore. And it's nice to know that you're following me, Hank, in case I get lost somewhere along the way.
Yep, I can guide you to Newark.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But yeah, this year my travel started in Chicago. I picked up my daughter, Kelly, and we drove across to Cleveland and into upstate New York and then down through Pennsylvania and around. And I ended up here at our family home that's been in my family since the early 1900s. The house was built in 1889. And the thing that's interesting about this coming home, this traveling that I do every summer that kind of brings me back to this space, is that the minute I get to upstate New York, to the Jersey Shore, I feel home in a really profound way, this really deep sense of belonging. My soul knows it's home again. I was born in upstate New York, and my family's all from New Jersey. And the dilemma is I get here, and I feel at peace. I feel serenity. And yet all the people I love are on the West Coast. All of my people now are in California, my children, my parents, my brothers and sisters. And so how do I deal with that split of two homes, that internal soul home of my childhood or my ancestors? I'm not sure how to describe it. And then my reality of home, where my people are. How do we define what exactly is home? So that's the topic today, and I'm grappling with this issue, and I'm so glad to have two guests returning to the studio to kind of man the ship for me while I'm on the road. Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin, are you in your respective seats?
Yes, we are.
We are indeed.
I get to be in your comfy chair.
Oh, good. I'm glad you got the comfy chair. It is the best. But Kyle and Ashlyn have been busy this summer. We had them in as guests earlier this summer talking about their project, talking about home in Arroyo Grande and interviewing citizens about how they define place and community and what it is to be a citizen. And it came to fruition this last weekend in three or four performances.
Four. Well, five, actually, technically. We did one for some middle school students.
Oh, that's wonderful. Five performances at the Clark Center. So they're back today to talk about that experience, what they learned from the 100-plus interviews they did with citizens, where we go from here as a community, maybe with very divergent or different ideas of how to move forward, and what they're going to do with the information. So I'm going to be turning the program over to them today. They'll be taking phone calls. They're going to share their experiences. And I just am looking forward to kind of going deeper into this idea of how we define home. Is it the place where our soul resides, or is it the place where our people are? And how do we bring the two together to find peace within ourselves and peace within our community? And you're going to be invited to be part of this conversation by calling 805-781-3875. You can also follow us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Just like our page, and you'll get updates each week about what our current topic is, or you can leave messages there. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or you can podcast our show by visiting Apple Podcasts or NPR One, or however you download podcasts. Just search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the shows will be uploaded or downloaded onto your device for you to listen to whenever you'd like. And also, when you're thinking about today's topic, let's think about this broad idea of community, home, space, and generational perspectives. I'm excited to hear what Ashlyn and Kyle have to say about this topic from their perspective in their early 20s. So Kyle and Ashlyn, I turn the show over to you.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Yeah, thank you so much, Elizabeth.
All right.
So yeah, here we go. Big shoes to fill here in the studio. Okay, so today, yeah, we're going to be talking about this project that we undertook over the summer. Kyle and I, working with Rhizome Theater Company, which is a local theater company that's committed to making theater about and by and for the members of this community. So we're hoping to sort of follow a little bit of a three-act structure today, similar to the show that we put on. So Kyle, do you want to talk about that?
Right. So yeah, in order to give this the hour that we have together just a little bit of a shape, first we're just going to, for those who weren't able to see the show, we just wanted to talk a little bit about what we did, both in performing the show, but more even in making it. Throughout the summer.
So that's the prologue.
That's the prologue, right, what we did. And then we're going to talk for our first act, if you will. We're going to talk about what we learned from the experience of making and performing the show. And then that will segue to our second act, which is about how people responded to the show, because we really weren't sure how people were going to respond. And certainly the responses were all over the map. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of those, and we're going to invite you who are listening, maybe if you did get a chance to see the show, to call in and share your own experiences with it, positive or negative or otherwise. And then lastly, for our third act, we're going to talk about what we see as sort of the next steps in terms of thinking about where we want our larger community to go. Because one of the takeaways from the show was that change is inevitable, and certainly this area, like the rest of our country and our world, is changing. And so we're going to sort of think and talk with you, hopefully, about where that change is taking us and how competing visions of the future can coexist in a way that's productive and not only destructive.
Yes. So if you're interested, please stick around. Please call in at some point during the show. We're really interested to hear your thoughts. I mean, this was a project about community and community input, so it would be really great and exciting for us to hear other voices in the room with us today, too. And, you know, Kyle and I, we just finished really making the show part of this project, and we haven't really gotten to debrief it too much together. So you're kind of going to be listening in on what is the first of hopefully many conversations about how this went.
The real reluctant therapist, Elizabeth Barrett, describes herself as an eavesdropper, so now you can play that role yourselves today.
Yes.
The number to call in throughout the show is 805-781-3875, and we invite you at any time to call in and join our conversation.
Yes, and we also have our studio engineer, Bree, who might drop in during the conversation for a little bit as well, who is lovely and awesome.
Thank you. That's so great. I do have a question for you two.
Yeah.
So was this your first experience writing a play together, or have you written plays individually before?
Well, you know, actually what we said at the top of the show, often when we were putting this show on, we had a little bit of an introduction, and we said the show, it was kind of written, but more than being written, it was like collaged.
Assembled, arranged.
Compiled, etc. So we kind of wrote it together, and we kind of just sort of pieced it together, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But yeah, this was our first project of this sort together,
but,
I would say.
But Ashlyn, you've sort of studied this type of theater making before, right?
Yes, yeah. So this is a sort of theater making that I studied in college, and I actually had just made a show very much like this with an entirely different group of people in an entirely different community. It was my college community, Reed College. So I was up in Portland, and I was working with this community where a lot of people, you know, they have a very strong connection to it, but it's like a four-year connection. It's college, right? People go, and then people are sort of nostalgic about it, and you have alumni, and you do have professors who are there for a long time, and you do have staff members, but it was really different to come back and do it in Arroyo Grande, where some people have lived their entire lives, and their parents lived there,
and
their grandparents lived there. So I had some experience with like the technical ins and outs of doing this sort of theater making, but Kyle and I had never done it together, and we had never done anything like this at home.
Yeah, so in a way it felt, for me it was brand new. I'd never made anything like this. I had very little experience. I think like most people, I didn't really know that theater could be something that was more than fictional, you know, more than I'm going to sit down and make up a play. that it could be based on interviews. And so that was really exciting to do.
So you mentioned that this play, it was kind of based on interviews you did in Arroyo Grande. Are you two, both of you, do you consider Arroyo Grande to be your home?
Absolutely. I mean, we both, I don't want to speak for Ashton, but I think we've talked about it enough that I think I can in this instance. We both grew up in Arroyo Grande and went to school there. And still, even though we went to different places for college, both of us, I think we both still consider it to be our home, certainly.
Yeah, and I mean, we've both lived other places as well, not for as long as we lived in Rio Grande, certainly, but Kyle's lived abroad, and I lived in New York for a while, and yeah, we both have been, you know, living in our college towns for a significant amount of time, but there is a definite home connection to Rio Grande.
And go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think that in a way, I think it up the stakes for us a little bit, if you will, because we felt, well, this is our home too. And so we were doing, it wasn't like we were doing a sort of anthropological study of some place that we didn't know anything about. It was doing a sort of deliberate exploration of this place that we'd lived and known all our lives. And knowing that we would continue to have relationships to the area even after we made the show. So I think we felt an extra responsibility to try to do a fair and thoughtful job of it.
Sure. And I've heard you guys are talking about how you've lived in all these different places. And I'm curious, do you consider other places that you've lived as your homes as well? And how do you know those places are your home?
That's a really good question. So we actually, in the show that we were doing, Night Town Normal People, there were like sort of discussion interludes in between pieces of performance in the show. So we would ask people to just like, with the person sitting next to them, swap a quick definition of home. And then we would sort of walk around the room and do that with people too. So I got to hear a bunch of definitions of home, both from the interviews we did and then also from this moment in the show when people would sort of talk to their neighbors. And somebody, when I went and talked to them in the middle of the show, said something that really resonated with me, which was like, home is any place where you have any sort of group of people who you know love you no matter what, who you feel maybe more comfortable with than you do in other places in the world, with whom you feel like you can be yourself, whatever that means to you. And so I do think, I mean, Arroyo Grande is certainly the first place I ever felt that. But I do think also in, you know, my Portland community, I found a group of people with whom I did feel very much at home. And so it would always be funny because I spent a lot of time over the past 4 years when I was in college bouncing back and forth between Arroyo Grande and Portland. And every time I was leaving one and going to the other, I felt really lucky to say, oh, I'm going home. And it was always true, no matter which direction it was in.
Yeah. I also, similarly, I really enjoyed talking to people, other people about what they thought of as home. And I was talking to this guy, Roberto, who's from El Salvador but lives here in San Luis Obispo now. And he said, well, to me it's complicated because I was displaced from El Salvador, so there's always, you know, a bit of a divide there of, well, this is where I live, this is where a lot of people I love, but then there's also this place where I come from where I also have those people. So I think that oftentimes we think of as home as being like one place.
Yeah,
this
singular.
Is home. But I think that one of the things I took away from this was that there can be multiple places that are home.
Yeah. All right. So we have a caller on the line now.
Yes, we do.
Janae, who has, I think, a question for us. So let's hear what Janae has to say. Hello, Janae.
Hi. First time listener and caller.
Oh,
and
thank
I
you
had
for
a
calling.
Question about a question that you had asked the audience during the show. You said what that you've heard tonight has kind of surprised you, and I was just wondering what you guys heard that surprised you when you were interviewing people.
That's a good question, Kyle.
Well, before we answer that, Janae, can I turn the question around on you? And so you saw the show?
I saw it 3 times.
Wow. Super fan.
I'm a big super fan of all that your guys' work.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I'm curious, is there something that that surprised you either in seeing the show multiple times or in talking to people about, you know, during the course of the show?
Yeah, definitely hearing about the people that were Chinese being driven out of the area was really surprising and shocking and sad to me. Mm-hmm. And I think I said that pretty much every time I saw it because it just really stuck with me every time I saw the show. And I was also just surprised at the slight changes in the show that you guys did every night. It was pretty exciting to see that.
Thank you. Kyle, do you maybe want to explain a little bit more what Janae is talking about there?
Yeah, so just for those who didn't get a chance to see the show, the middle act of our show was about the history of Oro Grande, and we talked to a local historian, Jim Gregory, and he told us about in the late 1800s, there was essentially the most Chinese people were literally run out of Oro Grande, a group of hooligans, including some of the town's finest citizens, showed up to a Chinese road gang that was working on building the railroad between Napomo and Arroyo Grande. And they said, all right, you got a couple weeks to get out of town or we'll kill you. So ever since then, there's ethnically speaking in Arroyo Grande, the Chinese population, you know, there's a Chinatown in San Luis Obispo, but not in Arroyo Grande because of that.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, Janae. That was one of the things that really surprised me, too, in doing the interviews. I had no idea that happened. And I think something else that surprised me, which I talked about a little bit when Kyle and I were on the show earlier this summer, it surprised me how deeply scared a lot of the community members I talked to are to talk to one another. I think in the sort of interview setting, right, where, I mean, we did this over and over and over, but I would go and meet up with people, and it was one-on-one, and it was really clear because we had set up an interview that, you know, I was there to listen to them, and my whole function was to ask them questions and to hear what they had to say. And so they would share that, you know, like in a maybe more normal conversational setting where you go and you sit down with somebody, it was really scary to them to bring up their ideas about maybe how Oro Grande should or could change, or how our country should or could change, or maybe just like what is frustrating to them about living in a small town. People feel really scared to bring that up. And I guess I knew that we weren't having the conversations, but I didn't understand the extent to which the reason why is maybe because we're frightened of what people will say to each other.
And just how different people's visions of reality are. I think a lot of people responded, you know, we would ask the same question and we did 100 interviews, say, and we got 100 different answers. And certainly there was overlap, but everyone has their own take on things. And I think that it's really hard to reconcile those different takes, but one of the things that making the show gave me was hope, because I think that there is a way for us to see that, hey, at the end of the day, we are trying to make this be the best place that it can be, and if we talk about it, maybe we can figure it out together rather than separately, you know. And that's idealistic, but I think we need a little bit of idealism now.
I agree.
Thanks so much for calling in, Janae. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
I just want to remind people that you are listening to a very special edition of A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist on KCBX. Elizabeth's on vacation right now, and we have a couple of wonderful people in the studio today. I'm Bree Zender, and we're talking with Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin about their show. Can you tell us a little bit, remind the audience about your show?
So we're going to just... Yeah, so we did a show called Nice Town, Normal People, which was about Arroyo Grande, sort of the history, the present, and the future. And it's based on nearly 100 interviews we did with AG community members. And it was sponsored by the Davis Projects for Peace, which is an organization that sponsors young people like ourselves to make projects that attempt to foster peace in their communities. So So that's what we did.
Yeah, and I mean, I think right now we are sort of maybe being a little bit vague about how we went about doing that, so maybe we should just be a little bit more specific about what the making process was like.
Yeah.
So yeah, we keep saying this thing of about 100 interviews. So yeah, really what we did was we decided, okay, we want to make a show where we don't write the words in the script. Like Kyle said, it's not fictionalized. It's not like, what do I think about a Rio Grande? Or what do we as two people think about a Rio Grande? But rather, what do, you know, a wide swath of people in our community think about what is going on in this town and what our town is and could be? So we reached out. First, we just sort of sent out first we went to the Strawberry Festival. And we had a booth at the Strawberry Festival where people walked by and we just asked them questions about what they think about home. And then we sort of started reaching out based on those conversations to other people in the community who might be interested in talking to us. And we would sit down and do about an hour long interviews with people. And ask them all kinds of questions about how their life is in Rio Grande. And then from there, we had a bunch of material. And Kyle, maybe you can explain a little bit what we did after that.
Right. So from there, we had literally hundreds of pages of audio that we transcribed from those interviews. And then we went through and read and pulled quotes that we saw and separated them into thematic sections. So if we saw from one interview that this person was talking about, say, diversity or the lack thereof in Rio Grande, and then we will put that into a big master document under the diversity section. And we did that for all the interviews in all different types of thematic areas: diversity, religion, education,
development, immigration,
history, fears, hopes for the future, community needs,
questions,
things like that. And then we went through and we read literally every quote out loud to each other to kind of get a sense of what they sounded like. And then from there, we kind of pared down and simulated these conversations in a way. We pulled quotes and tried to have people talk to each other on stage via us reading their words and have these conversations that they probably never would have actually had in real life.
Yes, good explanation. And then we went into the performance of it. So that is what we've been talking about when we said we had four performances this weekend, where we invited people into the room to see what we've been doing and to continue having those conversations with us. And we gave people the opportunity to donate money at each performance. We had allocated $1,000 of our own budget that all of our audience members helped us decide how to allocate. So that's sort of when we're talking about the process of making this show. That's more of the nitty-gritty of it. So now we have a caller on the line. We have Lee, who would like to talk to us. So, Lee, how is it going?
Hi, Lee. Are you there?
Yes.
Hi.
Do you have a comment or question?
Hi. My name is Lee. I live in Los Osos, and I heard about the production on Reluctant Therapist last month. I was driving to Rio Grande, which I normally don't go to, so I thought that was wonderful. And I think it's a brilliant title. It's so ironic. And I really admire your ability to memorize so much dialogue. It was an incredible amount of dialogue. And I, until recently, wrote theater reviews for the Tribune, and I've been involved in some aspect of live theater most of my life because my father did community theater. I liked everything about it. It was absolutely unique, creative, clever, with pathos and humor, a good mix. The entire presentation with the string and combination of listening to the recorded interviews. It was just tremendous.
Thank you.
I'm afraid it was difficult to understand the recorded people, and that's because people aren't used to how they sound being recorded.
Yeah.
Even in live theater, a lot of times the actors will drop the last word of a sentence.
Right.
It just happens, and if there's any way you could do a type up everything that the people said and put it on a two overhead screens.
That's a good idea.
That would have been, you know, that's a possibility.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I liked getting acquainted to the people sitting next to us, and a nice serendipitous thing happened then because people next to me from Arroyo Grande, well, his sister lives two blocks away from me, and I know her and her husband quite well. So that was like an expanded thing about home and small world. But the couple at the end, it was very touching, but I feel that they don't have a snowman's chance in hell of having their dream come true in Arroyo Grande because of the cost of rent.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the themes that came up a lot in our interviews is the increasing cost of housing on the entire Central Coast, really.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for your comments, Lee.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you both. It was just wonderful.
Thanks so much, Lee. Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear from people who saw the show, like Lee, and it's heartening to get those positive responses from people. And part of, as Ashton said, part of our goal was to get people to talk to each other during the show, and so to have, you know, serendipitous interactions like that, I think was part of our motivation for making a peace project. Was, hey, we're all people, and yes, we have different opinions, but people talk to each other all the time. What if we made a deliberate effort of talking to people that we didn't know or who looked different from us or sounded different from us? So it's great to hear that.
Yes. And I think, I mean, segueing a little bit into what we thought might be our act two, which is about how people responded. We did show this piece to several people before it was ever, you know, fully performed, I guess. We showed it to people in stages. We showed it to people as we were working on it. And one of the things that we noticed as we were showing it to people was sometimes the more difficult things we would talk about, so diversity or gender dynamics or maybe this tension between whether AG, the place we love, should change or should stay the same. When we would bring those things up, people would be, it would be uncomfortable, right?
Yeah. Like, I mean, we did have some strong negative reactions, I would say, from some people. There's people who are, I think, shaken by the idea that there were other perspectives on AG, and they saw this and they thought, well, this is not the Arroyo Grande that I know. This place where we had people in our interviews talking about how they were afraid in Arroyo Grande, or they were harassed in Arroyo Grande, or they don't feel like they belong there. Or they feel
not listened to, not welcome.
Right. And so we had people respond negatively saying, hey, I've lived here and my family's been here for a long time. This is not the Arroyo Grande I know. Who did you talk to anyway?
So it was cool to have people in the room together during the show speaking to one another, because I think in some ways it sort of I don't think it necessarily alleviated the discomfort, but it made it clear, hey, here is a room of people, all of whom have unique experiences of Arroyo Grande, all of whom have unique relationships to Arroyo Grande. And you could literally turn, you know, to your right, to your left, talk to somebody you know, talk to somebody you don't know, and hear something that maybe you've never heard before about what it's like to live in this town.
Right. And as Lee alluded to in her call, we also had a ball of yarn that we were unraveling throughout the show and connecting people in. It was a theater in the round, so it was a sort of an oval type thing with a stage in the middle, and so people were literally being connected by the yarn throughout.
All right, we have another caller now, Bruce, who has a question. Bruce, what's your question?
Hi, Bruce, are you there?
I want to just commend you for the great job. I attended one of your shows and was very moved. I found it a great community event as far as bringing people together in a room to encourage dialogue and appreciation for varying perspectives. And I think the show was intelligent to bring a broad cross-section of the community together through your interviews. And so it was clear that you had interviewed both old people and young people and maybe some of the people that don't normally have a voice in our community, such as immigrants or minorities. And I think people that took offense with it maybe misinterpreted something, because I think your message or the message that was conveyed through the interviews was of, I think, appreciation for our diversity and knowing that we are all children of God or children of somebody, to steal one of your lines from the show. We're all children of somebody, and we have to figure out, you know, a way to try to make our communities accepting and welcoming for everybody. And I do think it is one of the themes that I think would pop up almost anywhere in the world, but certainly along the Central Coast, is affordability and accessibility for young families to live and work and create home, because so many of us older 50-year-olds and older, we already have ours. We have our home. We're lucky enough to have done what we did 20 or 30 years ago. And yeah, the idea is we don't want somebody to take our slice of heaven, but it seems to me that that's one of our biggest challenges, is to make our communities more accepting and able to be accessible for lots of different people from all walks of life. And that's all I got to say. I'll hang up and listen, but thanks for sharing a great show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bruce, for calling in. I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, so something I think that Bruce brought up, actually, one of our interviewees elucidated it well, and we included that line in the show, but it's a question of how do we make this the sort of community that we want to see it be, an open and accepting place, not just for those who benefit most from it remaining static. Because I think when we were doing sort of, like Kyle said, our feedback sessions where we talked to people who maybe have lived in this community for a long time, we were seeing that maybe some of the people who are most jarred are people who do have a long-time positive connection to Arroyo Grande. And that's not to invalidate their experience. It's totally possible to have an awesome experience of Arroyo Grande, and that we don't want to take that away from people at all. But it is a question of, well, so how can we make it so that everybody has that experience, not just the people who have had that experience for the past several generations?
Right. I think there's this prevailing idea, and I would go as broad as to say in American culture, that, and I think it comes from our sort of, you know, our capitalistic national religion in a way of, we are a capitalistic country. And I think part of capitalism is the idea that there are winners and there are losers, and the losers serve the winners. And that's just how things have to work. And I think that part of what I learned from this process of making the show, and also how people responded to the show, was that doesn't necessarily have to be true. That it is possible for the people who have lived in Arroyo Grande forever and have loved it for forever to continue to love it, but also for new people to come in and enjoy it as well and have a space that is welcoming to them. And will that require some tough conversations and some real dialogue and at times conflict? Yes, but I don't think that old, quote-unquote, old AG has to lose out for new AG to make its way in. I think there is a way for all to coexist.
Yeah, I agree. If you want to be a part of this conversation with us, you can call into the station at 805-781-3875, and we'll be really excited to talk to you, whether or not you've seen the show. We had people call in who have seen the show, and that's been lovely. But if you have just questions or ideas about home, or this conversation resonates with you, or you want to provide some constructive feedback for us, have at it. We're excited to talk to you.
This is a conversation with the reluctant therapist. Elizabeth Barrett is on the road, but she'll be back here next week. She's at her home away from home, if you will, this week. But we're here in the studio having a conversation about our project, Nice Town, Normal People, which performed this weekend at the Clark Center, but was really a summer-long project exploring peace and the idea of of home and what we want our home to look like for all of us.
Absolutely. And again, this is KCBX Public Radio. I'm Bree Zunder, and I am joined today by Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin, and they're talking about their show Nice Town Normal People. I have a quick question for the both of you.
Yeah.
In choosing the people that you decided to interview, did you just kind of how did you choose the people? I'm curious to see, you know, are these people in your group of family and friends, or how did you reach out to people to get kind of a more diverse point of view aside from the people you're around all the time?
Yeah, well, so like I said, at the very beginning, the first thing we did for this project really was to have a booth at the Strawberry Festival. And what we did there was we interacted with a lot of people who I at least had never met and had an email list. And so all of these people who seemed interested in the project signed up for the email list. And some of them were people that we knew, but a lot of them I had never met before. And so that's sort of where we started, was this list of people who we met at this big community event. And then from there, we sent out, just like sort of a group email to that list and said, hey, do any of you who expressed interest in the project want to be interviewed, sit down for an hour-long interview? And some of them said yes, and then we would ask those people if they knew people who we should talk to. We also made sort of an online Google form that people could share however they wanted to share. And so it became sort of a series of connections, much like we were trying to emphasize in the show, right? That community is the series of connections. That's kind of how we got in touch with people.
And we made a concerted effort both in doing the interviews and in inviting people to see our show, which was free. Made an effort to reach out to community groups across the county that represent all different kinds of identities and backgrounds. So reaching out to Trans Central Coast, to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, the Five Cities Diversity Coalition, the NAACP of San Luis Obispo County, to invite them to the show. And then we ended up talking to some people as well who were involved with those. And just a sort of a domino effect of interviews.
Yeah, but like Kyle said, it was sometimes, there were some voices that weren't reflected in maybe our Strawberry Festival list. And so we said, okay, so like, how are we going to reach out to people whose voices aren't the dominant voices in the community? And some of the really, I think my favorite interviews that I did were at Lopez High School, the continuation high school on the Mesa. I had never really gone there before and I didn't really know what it was like there. And it's lovely, wonderful, amazing. And I wouldn't have experienced that if I wouldn't have done this project. But I guess, reaching out and finding those people was incredible.
And it was interesting to me what Bruce said when he called in about representing voices that aren't as often heard, because I think that is kind of what we were trying to do and part of what our idea of what peace was about. So at the beginning of every show, we really tried to preface it by saying that now we don't believe that peace means just, you know, pretending that everything's all right or not getting into conflict and peace is just, you know, smiling and whistling and walking along happily. But we believe that peace means recognizing the problems that we have and trying to unearth them and talk to people whose voices aren't often heard. So I'm curious, Ashlyn, because I know that you wrote an entire thesis about this, about the idea of folklore and how some voices are more dominant in a community than others. So I don't know. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, this idea that Kyle brings up of folklore really just means the stories that we as a community tell ourselves about ourselves. And folklore is a lot of times, it's how communities stay connected. Telling each other stories about what we are and why we exist as a community, why we continue to be a folk group, being defined as like any group of humans who share common characteristics. So say for the AG community, we would be a folk group who's defined by the fact that some of us live, work, or go to school in Arroyo Grande. Arroyo Grande is our common link. And we tell ourselves stories about why it is that we do that in order to keep ourselves connected, right? Like the reason that we tell those stories is because we don't want the community to fall apart. We maybe feel like there's a threat for some reason of our community disintegrating, but we really don't want it to. So we create stories about that. But then the problem becomes that often those stories that we tell The ones that continue on and on and on are the ones that are sort of like authored by the dominant voices in the community. So the people in the community who benefit most from it staying how it is. And so we end up with these stories that it seems like they should speak for everybody, right? Like stories about why Arroyo Grande is the way it is, that it's a small town, that it's a nice town, that we're normal people. Those stories don't necessarily benefit everybody, but it kind of seems like they do until we crack into them, right? Until we fracture them, until we think about really deliberately, who do these stories benefit and who do they exclude? And so for me, and I think for us, this was a project of really asking like sometimes difficult questions about, okay, so like this community, I've understood it to be this way my entire life, but is it really that way for everybody? Or was I just told that it's that way for everybody?
Yeah, along that line, I have a quick question. What, prior to doing this project and conducting, you know, over 100 interviews, correct? Over mm-hmm. that? Wow, that's amazing.
Or close to 100, yeah.
What were your preconceived notions about what people from Arroyo Grande are? I know I have my own. I'm curious, as people who grew up there, what was your preconceived notion of these people and how did it change after doing this project?
Yeah, I mean, I think Kyle and I have both talked about this a little bit, and people who we interviewed echoed these sentiments. But it's like, oh, well, Arroyo Grande it's a small town, you know, it's friendly, there's not really a lot going on. We're just sort of, you know, we're keeping on keeping on. There probably are some problems here, but a lot of people aren't thinking about them, and it's kind of sleepy. And then after doing all of these interviews, I think I found that more than I ever was aware of before, people are thinking about the same things that I'm thinking about and are concerned about the same things that I'm thinking about, and even are maybe more affected than I realized by some of the discrepancies or like manifestations of inequity that are at play in Arroyo Grande. You know, there's a lot of like we were talking about, it's really expensive to live in Arroyo Grande. There's a lot of very affluent people in AG, but then there are some really not affluent people who are trying to be a part of the community and are actively being excluded by the centrality of money, of spending money to go to festivals or to go to community events. And so I think for me, I was really exposed to the fact that people are thinking about this and people want to talk about it, but don't have a place to, don't feel like they're welcomed to. So for me, I think it was an expansion of what I originally thought Arroyo Grande was.
Right. And every night at the show, I was surprised because of course I'm human like everyone else. And we all have our immediate reactions to what someone looks like. So I would see, for lack of a better description, old, like very old white people coming in, and I thought, oh boy, they're really not going to like this because we're talking about how people of color or minorities or people with different, more marginalized identities, how they have a different experience of Arroyo Grande. But every night I was surprised talking to those very same people afterwards. And they came up to me and they said, hey, this was really fair, or this was really transformative, or this opened my eyes, or you know, or even they said, I've already been thinking about this so much, and it's nice to
hear that somebody else is too,
right.
Or that so many other people are too, because yeah, like we said, there were conversations amongst, it wasn't just like me and Kyle as actors talking to people, it was all kinds of people in the room talking to one another, and I think yeah, it was astounding to me in an amazingly positive way how deeply compassionate people were, how excited people are to think about these things and to connect with each other. And I mean, I think what hasn't changed for me is my understanding of AG as, you know, a fundamentally kind and loving place where there are so many people who care about each other. I think what has changed for me is I have maybe a more nuanced understanding of the conversations that we need to have in order to support the people in our community who need to be supported. And I mean, it's uncomfortable. It's scary. There's somebody in one of our interviews who articulated it really well and said, like, I don't even know if I want to have these conversations. It's hard to want to have these conversations, but we need to have them if we want this community to be all that it can be.
Right. And I think that in a way, I mean, we also had a lot of people who responded to us after the show saying, this could be any small town in America. This could be, because I think that really the questions that are facing our country now as ever have to do with race and with class. And I think to name those things as issues that we have to grapple with, I think that really scares people, because that's what we've been trained. The moment someone talks about race, or they name whiteness, or they name affluence, or they name development, or they name capitalism, or they name all these things, to say that this is what's happening is not in itself to place blame. It's not to negatively say, oh, this is terrible. It's just that to name what's happening is I think the first step in figuring out how we want to change how we live and make it better for everybody.
Right. And going back to what I was saying a little bit ago about folklore, you know, when we do name these things, particularly these words or concepts or whatever that are sometimes glossed over in the stories that we often tell ourselves about ourselves, it can be scary. It feels like we're calling our sense of our foundation, our sense of history into question. But it's necessary, right? It's necessary if we want to expand the way that we tell stories and expand the idea of who we're including or who is belonging. It's necessary to have this feeling of discomfort for a little bit in order to make as many people included as we can.
I just want to take a quick break here and remind our listeners that you are listening to a special edition of The Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist on KCBX. Joining me today, I'm Bree Zender. Joining me today is Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin, and they're talking about their project they did on the town of Arroyo Grande and the people in it, called Nice Town, Normal People. If you'd like to call in and if you have a question or comment, you can call us at 805-781-3875, and you'll have a chance to be on air and talk with Ashlyn and Kyle about whatever you want. So I do have a quick question. The interviews that you had, I'm sure, you know, each interview is probably very different based on that person's life and their experience in Arroyo Grande, but what were the questions that you went into the interviews and asked these people?
We had a lot of different questions. Some of them were Arroyo Grande specific, so like, what is your relationship to Arroyo Grande? What is your definition of home? If you're, you know, if you do live in Arroyo Grande, why particularly is Arroyo Grande home for you? If you could change one thing about Arroyo Grande, what would it be? We had a whole section in our play, which was about people's answers to that. Particularly many people's answers to that had to do with diversity. So we sort of highlighted that in our play. We asked, what do you think is most wonderful or special about Arroyo Grande? What have you noticed? Because many people who we interviewed have lived in Arroyo Grande for quite a long time. So we asked, like, in the past decade, what have you noticed has changed? And how do you feel about that change? Are there other questions that you...
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of varied based on... We tried to have conversations rather than formal interviews with a set list of questions. And so they varied a lot based on who we were talking to.
But yeah, those were some of the jumping off points. And then we also asked more sort of, I would call them like zoom out questions. So what does it mean to you to be an American? Why are we here on this earth? If you could do anything with, you know, $1,000 to benefit the community, what would you do?
Right. And that I think that's kind of a nice segue to what we had talked about at the beginning of the show is sort of third act for our show today, and really the third act for the show that we performed at the Clark Center, which is what are the next steps for Arroyo Grande and for communities around the nation, thinking about change, growth, and competing visions for the future, and how we can work through those in a productive way. Because I think that what we learned, or what I learned from the interviews, and what we're seeing in a lot of our country now, is the sense of the sort of social fabric being torn apart. Like, divisions are too great for us to be able to come together and achieve the country that we've been promised.
So, I mean, what we tried to do throughout our show was provide sort of an infrastructure for people to be able to have the conversations that it seems like people need to be having in a way that's not scary. And a lot of that means listening, right? And so what we were doing really in performing the words of these fellow community members, it wasn't so much about like us putting on a performance. The goal wasn't for me or Kyle necessarily to show off like our acting skills or anything like that. The goal was to bring in the words of people's community members, people's literal and figurative neighbors, and just help them engage in a sort of active listening. And I think for me, that's been one of the big takeaways of what comes next, both, you know, in our small town of Arroyo Grande and across the country, is like probably what we do next is listen actively to one another, engage in conversations where the point isn't necessarily to convince somebody that they are wrong or, like Kyle alluded to earlier, to win, or to have like somebody come out on top and somebody sort of be the underdog in the conversation, but really to sit down with people and ask, what do you think about, you know, like the issues of race that are being discussed in our country right now? What do you think about how difficult it is to live in Arroyo Grande if you don't have a lot of money? What do you think about immigration or about LGBTQ issues or whatever? And hear somebody out.
Right. I mean, the whole project was founded upon this idea that in a world, in our world, which is so loud and shouting so much of the time, that listening is itself a radical act, like truly listening. And as someone said in our show, listening without saying, without thinking the whole time, oh, how am I going to respond to this? What can be my comeback? Or listening without thinking immediately, oh, this is just a liberal speaking. This is just a conservative speaking, without thinking of it as a partisan issue, but taking people's experiences as valid and just listening to what their actual words are saying.
Yeah. And part of that, right, is something that Kyle said a while ago that I thought was really lovely, second-guessing every first impression that you have. We had a musician who helped us with this show, Macomi Alexander Hill, certified musical genius.
Amen.
Amazing. And he too, I think one of his big takeaways, I wish he could be with us today, but he's on his way back to New York. But one of his big takeaways is this, this idea of, well, you know, when you see anybody, when you drive past somebody, when you walk past somebody, when you're sitting in a classroom with somebody, when you work next to somebody, you do have a preconceived notion of who they are and why they're doing what they're doing. But when you engage in these difficult conversations with them, you know, just open up your mind a little bit. Try to sort of put your preconceived notions to the side and allow yourself to re-see them and hope that they can re-see you in terms of whatever new information it is that they're sharing with you.
So much of our lives are dictated by this constant monologue that's going through our head. Like the little stories that we're telling ourselves are sort of internal folklore, if you will, and how those are already biased by preconceived notions that we have based on culture or the way we were raised or where we come from, et cetera, et cetera. So to do the best that we can to shut that monologue down, even just for a few moments, to turn the volume down and take control of it and deliberately make it something that such that we're able to realize that what we tell ourselves is not actually the reality, that the reality is something that exists beyond the tenuous and tiny borders of the self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got a question. You guys, both of you two have your own unique identities, and also part of that identity is you consider your home as Arroyo Grande. I'm curious to know about your experience. You interviewed all types of different kinds of people, and you had to portray their lives from kind of filtering through your point of view as a playwright and through your own personal identities. How is it for you to portray different people's stories, knowing, given that responsibility of trying to portray it accurately?
Yeah, I mean, it was a real challenge and a real gift, I think. Everybody who we interviewed, you know, gave us permission to use their quotes and to weave those quotes together. And I think for us, as we were putting the show together, we were trying always to honor that that privilege that people had shared with us to use their words and their thoughts. We didn't necessarily throughout the show like put on a different costume or play a different character every time we shared a different person's quote. We kind of we try to think of like the essence of that person if we had interviewed them, or maybe try and give like the feeling of their quote or a little bit of the tenor of their voice. But more than anything, I think what we were really striving for was to get the depth of their feeling across. You know, we never wanted to undercut somebody's words. We never wanted to make something into a joke that wasn't a joke. We never wanted to like put somebody on the spot in a way that felt unfair. We did, like we were saying, try to put people's quotes into conversation with each other. And so sometimes that was uncomfortable or difficult because people disagreed. And, you know, it was difficult because sometimes maybe we would agree with one side of an issue more than another. But I think we tried to be fair and we tried to be as compassionate as we could be. And that's a challenge when making something like this, certainly. Kyle, do you have any?
Yeah, I think it's the same idea. I mean, we didn't try to imitate people. I think for me, it was almost like getting back at that old idea of the Greek choir. Like, this is not, these, yes, this is comprised of individual voices in the community, but we stripped them of their name and of their individualness, such that what we got was a sort of cacophony of the community. And I really liked that idea of getting past the individual notion of selfhood. But I mean, this is just the deeper artistic theory behind it. I mean, we had talked at the beginning of the show, Ashlyn, about what we're going to be taking away from this. And I think that the quote that's going to stick with me most, there's so many, but the one that would probably stick with me most is this quote about this guy who says, "There's a constant refusal in me, even at age 65, to be jaded or cynical." And he talks about the common history that we all share, this history that, for all its horror, still has people like that who just live fabulously unselfish lives.
Okay, and we've got one last tiny question. We got like 10 seconds to answer this, but do you have a way for people to access the show in any way who haven't seen it yet?
Hopefully soon. If you're interested in doing that, you could email rhizometheater @gmail.com.
Or just visit our website, www.rhizometheater.org, and we're hoping to get a video up there in a couple weeks.
Awesome. I want to thank my guests, Ashlyn Hatch and Kyle Berlin, for joining us today. A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist will return at this time next week, and Elizabeth will be doing a show from the road. We miss her so much here in the studio, and we're happy that she'll be back next week and wish her safe travels. Again, you can check out information about the Reluctant Therapist at our website, kcbx.org. Thanks for joining us.
Love you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
I'm sitting station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar.